Cheers.
Love you.
Love you.
All right.
Does it count if you don't go before?
No, I think you got to make every kind of noise you make. like unique New York, how now brown cow, 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 how brown.
This is like deja vu all over again.
Well, I was trying to wonder, do you remember when we did it?
I believe pre-COVID.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's four-ish at least years ago.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, this is the Frog Logic Podcast. I'm your host, David Rutt Rutherford. This is my beautiful wife, Jonna. This is episode, not quite sure what episode, I think 73. 73,
I think.
73, yeah.
Okay.
So the last time we sat down to do this was during COVID or before COVID? I think it was before.
I think it was before too.
Yeah.
It was definitely before we got married.
Yep. I could look it up on my phone right now, but I'm not going to.
It's okay.
It's irrelevant. Been a while.
It's irrelevant.
Yeah. So what is relevant is, and what I think the reason that we wanted to do this was, obviously, I just got back on this thing after 2 years and, you know, introduced the whole idea of what I learned over that time. And so I think what would be interesting is to talk about what you've learned as a mother, seeing as this is the Mother's Day special, what you've learned as a mother going through COVID, what you've learned as a mother switching our kids to new schools, all of our kids moving into that amazing transitional period in their young adult lives.
Yeah, preteen to teen.
Preteen to teen. Yeah. That's a good way to describe it. Mm-hmm. And the significance of all of that, you know, the emergence of all their identities. I think that's what I'm really interested to hear your perspective on. So let's just first start out with, you know, when we were in COVID after we got through, you know, after we got through me with all my guns on the table and.
Yeah, I woke up one morning and David had taken out his entire kit and laid everything on the kitchen table, our big dining room table that fits 10 people at least. And it was covered with ammo and gear, and he's fitting me on with belts and things, pants. I have no idea what most of it is. And from that point forward, I also began to lose sleep because I didn't realize how worried he was. And then that made me even more concerned about where we're at. So just to remind you all, we have four children, all girls. And that period of time was a real test to parenting, how we started seeing the world and what we envisioned our life as parents and how we wanted to raise our kids.
What about that? Yeah, I think that's the key right there, is how we want to raise our kids. I think every single parent out there, if they really care about being a good parent, they think about that. Like, what do we need to do to raise our children in a way that, you know, we can produce squared away human beings? And so as we're in this space, and the worry on me, the worry on you, and then obviously the whole world shuts down, and now all of a sudden they're in our homes, immersed in the grandeur of this global pandemic and all of the stuff we were hearing and what they were saying. What, in your mind, was a couple of things you really needed to think about in order to help our girls through this?
Well, I think that it was the first time as a family that we were spending so much time together without you traveling. It just gave us this really regimented time in this home as a family. And so that was the first time you, me, and all the girls were under one roof for extended periods. And so for me, at first, it was about just keeping normalcy in terms of a schedule for them, keeping them focused through what they need to do with their online schooling. And then, you know, that those first couple months were kind of easy because it was online school and the teachers were sending all the information. But then
I think you might be the only mother in the country that said the online schooling was easy for them.
It was pretty simple. I mean, the one few times they had to do like a PE assignment and they're doing like random jumping jacks in the kitchen and stuff like that was kind of funny. But by the time summer hit, that was when things kind of got tricky because we thought that things would settle down a bit and it didn't. And so then it got worse before it got better in terms of what was happening in the country. And so we had all the kids at home full time without any school. And so you and I started to generate some things like, we don't know how long this is going to last. And that we created some projects and assignments, and I was printing out sheets of math. And, you know, I think when I came across it in our, and some of our paperwork the other day, one of the things that you asked was, what does America, being from America, mean to me? And each of the girls had to write an essay. I mean, at that time, Heather was in, she was in first grade, kindergarten or first grade.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite impressive to see, you know, look back at that and kind of not only knowing that they were trying to do something that we asked in such a, you know, formatted way, but they, how much has progressed since then?
Well, I think with the interesting, well, I mean, obviously for me, it's interesting that you were willing to, you know, totally pivot and recognize that in this space, we really needed to work with our kids, right? We needed to instill in them, you know, that there's a way to manage all of the stress. There's a way to manage the disruption in the norm, right? Being able to go to school, sit in front of a teacher. I mean, I think a lot of people don't recognize the real tremendous impact that teachers and that structure can play for kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, monstrous.
One of the reasons we send them to school is that we want to be parents, but we don't want to be all things all the time. I think our kids understand us and listen to us better when they have other people also,
that's right,
guiding them in different ways instead of us being the people who have to set the tone and the standards and the discipline in the home and all the rules and where we're taking them and what they're doing, and then teach them math or teach them how to, you know,
I tell you what I learned is that the people out there that are homeschooling, man, that's an incredibly noble but taxing endeavor, right? To really lean into your children and the totality of their growth from an academic perspective, I think, as well as the other life lessons you can do. So that really is what kind of shocked me. I was like, oh my God, they're home. We have no idea when this is going to resume. What's going to happen? All right, let's teach themes. Let's teach some ideas or lessons that initiate a broader perspective of how they could learn. That's what I wanted to do.
And I think that we, not quickly, but we started to realize that, hey, wait a minute, this is a time that we can take advantage of instead of worrying about how quickly they can do their multiplication table, but we can and start to have deeper conversations with them. We have this time that is crucial that we've never had before. And the joining of our families happened rather quickly, but also just it happened and then we're just in the thick of it and we're on this like crazy, you know, chaotic journey together. And so COVID was the first time we could say, all right, let's
take
really talk. Yeah. Let's talk with the kids about what they want and what we, you know, things that are a little more about teaching them values and it, before even that, it was just time. I think we started playing like intense kickball games outside. We would go on family bike rides or family walks. We spent a lot of time at your parents, going to the club, going swimming, playing games in the pool.
And by the way, I just want to interrupt you. Those kickball games paid off. Our youngest just told me the other day that they, in the kickball tournament they were engaged in, she did really well. Got a triple or a home run every time up at bat. So kickball pays off.
Yeah. And I mean, our family is a bit competitive. So if David and I are on opposite teams, which has to happen most of the time to balance things out, we're going hardcore. So, yeah.
The question I have is, what did you learn you needed to do for each one of those kids, and especially me, in trying to manage like what is happening right now and how bad this is going to be?
Well, I think for the first time, I was able to individualize the kids more so and kind of give that time to each of them. Not that I didn't do that before, but probably not with your two girls, just because I didn't have as much time with them. And so this is also at a time before any of our children had cell phones. And so I think there was a pureness to what we were able to kind of dig into. And it's actually hard to remember all the details of what that was like, because they did start school. They went back to school that fall.
What's up, Florida?
Yeah, we did have that fortunate.
And sports continued too, which
sports
was
continued.
Huge.
There was a limitation. Only one of our children was playing like a travel sport at that time, just begun one. Mm-hmm. So it was okay. So we tried to keep things as balanced and normal as we could. We spent a lot of time going to your parents' house and sitting in the special room in their home that kind of gave me a break from
the sanctum sanctorum.
Yeah. It's like the sacred spot of just calmness and adultness. 'Cause I think we also needed that too.
I didn't even know what I needed. That was the first time I'd ever kind of like been like, you had to stop, and there was no momentum. There was nothing. I mean, obviously we did a bunch of different things to kind of process the collapse of the speaking industry and some of the others. But I think it was that's the consistency. The consistency was what was jolting for me. You know, I'm used to being on this roller coaster ride, but the ride that I can check in and check out. And this time I was in the midst of watching what you do every day when you have all four of them, when you have me. And for me, that was like, oh my God, how does she manage not just the logistics of our family, but really manage all the different personalities too?
It's pretty tough. We don't have a traditional situation. And I think that, you know, you started this by saying that I think something about how people, you know, the main thing people think about is how to raise kids. And I actually don't know if that's fully true. And I think that's a little bit of what we're wanting to get into is sort of, the last 4 years have been a very eye-opening time for me as a mom, because we live in a very fast-paced community, and just I think in general the culture of where we're at right now is just so, everyone's so busy, so crazy. And so I don't unfortunately think a lot of people do have that intention as, all right, I'm a parent, and so what does that mean, and how do I every day take a second to evaluate what I want to do and how I want to do it and why I want to do it, so that I can show up for my children, my husband, and each of them individually, you know, as their own person, and do it well. And I think that's an intention that I have, but I don't know that I recognize that in a lot of people. And that's sort of, I think the reality of that hit, you know, as our kids were getting to, now we have one in high school, two in middle school, one about to enter middle school. This concept of, hey child, take this phone, and now you at, you know, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old are able to
babysit hold on yourself. Hold on.
Oh wait, where are we going?
Well, I mean obviously we initiated our rule. 13 was the age that you get the phone. Yeah. You know, our oldest got hers, immediately changed dynamics. But yeah. But you know, I think, you know, we've been very conscientious. None of them have. What is that knocking?
The cat.
Oh, it is?
He's just eating out of his cat bowl.
Oh, okay. Okay. Ready? Have any social media? You know, obviously.
One just got Instagram, but
for the first time.
She's 16, so.
You know, and I think that's been great. I mean, my favorite story is how our 12-year-old went into school, and the teacher was like, all right, you know, does everybody have a cell phone here?
Yeah, or raise your hand if you don't have a cell phone or something. And she was like, slowly putting her hand up. And the teacher sent an email shortly after praising me for saying, for not, you know, giving her a phone. But we did promise her before she went on her class trip that she would get one.
And she got one. So yeah. We've reduced it down to 12 and a half now. And so yeah. The youngest, who is 11, will probably have one at 12. So
yeah.
Hopefully, but the idea behind it for me was always, as they are maturing into these people that have to navigate not only the incredible difficulties of middle school and all that accompanies that, but the incredible weight of managing the perpetual contact, the evolution of themselves. Obviously, we also have a split family where my two girls go back to their mother's house, you know, and that transition that always takes place. And so, you know, for me, it was like, all right, they're about ready to explode into this next phase of their lives. We had a great time at COVID, but all right, what's the next step, right? How do we bounce back from this, but also, like, how do we leap forward into this massive transition of self-confidence, you know, who you are, where you fit in at school. You know, all the girls, you know, ended up, you know, moving towards one school, which I thought was awesome this year for sure. But as a mom, and you've seen each one of these girls evolve, what were the ideas that you learned from your own childhood and from being a mom, you know, that what was the best thing that you could do to help them through these situations or all of the situations that were kind of flowing together at that one point?
Well, it's interesting because I was just listening to a podcast with Jonathan Haidt, who's the social psychologist who talks and has written a couple books about this particular issue. And it made me think about how radically different my childhood was from our children's, but also wanting to incorporate, there's something wholesome about having, you know, like stripping the kids away from all the things that we're giving them now and just letting them be. And those ideas of, you know, going out and playing kickball, playing poker, teaching them how to play chess. You know, we used to read a lot to them at night. That's kind of gone away. But the biggest thing is for me is just the relationships with each other, the relationships with their grandparents, keeping those sort of the hierarchy of how your family works and as a front focus of what, you know, what our family really aspires to be. And that was difficult, because my family lives in Maine during that time. But, you know, I think my childhood was as...
'Cause you had three siblings too. So you were one of four.
Yeah. One girl with three brothers, but growing up, we played outside and we were told, like, don't come in unless you need a drink of water, or don't come in unless you, you know, throw a rock at your brother and knock, like, make him get a cut in his head. That was, we just had to find our own fun and figure it out. And you and I talked about this at some point. The girls were so attached, almost like wanting us to do everything to generate everything with them. For them, yeah. With them.
And I think that's a derivative of that connectivity in some capacity. Yeah. And also the fear of the world that's out there, right? When you and I grew up, like, you know, I could ride to the beach and back with my best friend, Richie, right?
Yeah.
You could go anywhere in your town and someone knew you. You knew someone. You could, you know, it was that kind of environment. But, you know, I think now one of the worst things that I bring to the table as a parent is that, you know, that acknowledgement of, you know, how risky things are out there and what types of people are out there. And I think, you know, I blame myself a little bit for the, you know, that lack of freedom nowadays.
Yeah. Kind of the fear, or we think of it as being situationally aware and making sure that they can be prepared for something negative to happen. But what has ended up happening is that it's just created fear in them. And then it's kind of, it's prevented them from kind of exploring on their own. And one of the things that Jonathan Haidt was talking about was saying that there's some statistic that boys are no longer the how many broken bones happen in young boys has, you know,
fallen off
the cliff in some crazy amount, that like a 55-year-old man is more apt to break a bone than a young boy. And that's just for the simple fact of them not going out and doing things like you did as a kid, where you're like on the rope swing into the canal and, you know, just taking those chances and growing up and not having your parents hovering around you and over you and making sure that you're always safe. Because what's happened is the reverse. It's created an anxiety.
That's right.
And that's now become its own epidemic.
Well, you look at the prevalence of girls' teenage suicide, you know, 2 years ago, it increased by 50%. And I'm not sure what the numbers are from this past year. I think it's tapered off a little bit, but the effect of COVID, the hyperconnectivity,
the hyperconnectivity through a phone, but not in person.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Hyperconnectivity.
Well, you're scrolling through all of the, what is it? The illusion.
Mm-hmm.
When you're exposed to the illusion and you don't have that reference, that cognitive, no, it's deeper than that. Well, it's the understanding of how people are pitching and what they're selling and what they're showing as an example of some fabricated existence. You know, kids get sucked into that, man. I mean, we get sucked into it. Everybody gets sucked into it, but I think more so for impressionable kids, especially impressionable kids who aren't getting the type of parenting that develops that connectivity. You know, I one of the things I want to say is, you know, what I've watched you do is I watched you create a foundation of strength. And I thought that was really unique, right? It was like, hey, No, we get up, we get going, we go through the day. Hey, you're going to get up, you're going to get going, you're going to get back into the game, right? Whatever might happen to the girls, you have this real consistent, you know, it's not incredibly histrionic reaction or anything. It's just like, hey, no, this hits and you're going to, this is some ideas of how to think about it. Now get back up and go. And I was hoping you could talk about the importance of that lesson, you know, not only from your childhood, but from your young adult life as a mom, and then specifically now in the world that we're living in with these four girls.
Yeah, I think it certainly goes back to my childhood. I think in the last podcast, I talked a bit about my grandfather being a World War II vet and being paralyzed from the waist down, and growing up with him and watching and experiencing not only my grandfather being handicapped, but and not really having anything that prevented him from living a full life, but also seeing my grandmother, who just went through things with such grace and, you know, this crazy amount of strength. To she had seven kids, and she was a charitable person in the community. And as a child, just watching how she handled herself and then gave everybody this space to be, to connect with her. And so that's something I witnessed all the time. I never felt judged by her at all. I just felt accepted. And that's what you need as a, especially as a little girl. I think there's just like, there's something that you get from a parent or grandparent that they're not feeding you any kind of bull. They're just there, and
the emotions are pure.
Yeah, there's a pureness to it. And I think if you were to ask any of our girls, I don't fluff anything about what they do. I don't really give them any sense of faults.
False motivation?
Not motivation so much, but
false praise.
Yeah. I don't praise unless there's a reason to praise. I don't really.
Why? What happens if you do that?
It's just truth for me. It's like being as honest as I can without, I'm not doing anything. I'm not on the other side saying something that's intentionally trying to hurt them, but I wouldn't say something to our children that I don't believe is true about them to give them a false sense of who they might be. I think that motivating is different. I think that you can always explain to them what their potential is and how to reach that. But if you're telling them that they're good at something that they're not, or that they're, that's wonderful, or also not disciplining in a moment that will actually do the opposite for them, I think you're directing them into something that will give them a false idea of who they are.
And you take that responsibility. Like you said, you're directing them. You figure it's the burden that you bear as a mother, those directions.
And I think a lot of this that we're talking about is, it's harder to do this than it is to do the opposite. It's harder to say no about a phone. It's harder to say no about giving them social media. It's harder to say no, you can't go on that date, and or you know, all these different things. It's harder to be the parent who is tough than not. And I think a lot of parents take the easy way out because they don't want to say no because they want their kids to like them. And what I found is that my kids like me already. They actually like the structure. They need the structure, and they feel more pride in themselves when they accomplish something that's real versus some, you know, false illusion of who they might be.
Yeah. And it's interesting. And I think they're being fed a narrative of, you know, the world that is contorted at a minimum, and, you know, and fabricated at a max, right? And I think, you know, watching you give them poignant, realistic advice that has a weight to it that they have to bear, I think that's the secret for sure.
I mean, I had very strong women in my life growing up. Both my grandmothers were very different, uniquely different, but had a strong presence in my development as a female. And my mom was just a rock and just a tough, resilient, just focused mother.
Focused is a great word to describe Gay.
Yeah.
For sure.
And she was able to, the thing that gave me the most strength from my mom was that she was always there. And I don't mean like she was just always there physically. She showed up for everything in every way. And so that is there's such a sense of security in that way. And that's something that I always have worked to give our children as well.
Well, that's the one amazing thing. I mean, everybody that has a big family recognizes the logistical nightmare of driving to, I think weekend average, we had nine soccer games in a weekend.
I was trying to think about it. I think last year and this year combined, I've probably watched like 200 soccer games.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
And then
performances?
I average like probably three trips back and forth to school a day.
I made three yesterday. You made three yesterday.
And so that, where some people might say, oh my gosh, that's so much. Think about, add up all those hours and you're in the car for 15 minutes each way. That's half an hour times three is an hour and a half of your day you're in the car. For me, maybe not in the morning because I'm not like the greatest. In the morning, I'm pretty quiet. I just like sit in my driver's seat and drive, let the kids listen to music. But in the afternoons, I'll tell you, I will never look back on this time with any regret because I get to spend the moments they walk out of that school and get in the car and they unload and they talk about all these things. And I feel so just blessed that I get to have those moments with them and listen. And each of them, it's kind of individual because it's a staggered pickup. And it's the time that they want to tell you the most important thing that has happened to them that day. And it's immediate. And if you don't get it then, you might not get it for the rest of the day. And so
I certainly don't. Hey, how was school today?
You're fine. Good in the morning.
Hey, what happened today? Nothing. Hey.
Yeah. But it's different because...
Oh, it's radically different. That's the difference between a mom and a dad.
It is, but it also is the difference. I think right now the girls are going through those years of trying to figure out who they are. And it's, I mean...
And what does that mean? What's the totality of figuring out who you are? And by the way, I
don't have it figured out,
hold on. I just want to tell the audience also what Jonna did over COVID. She got a master's degree in positive psychology with a emphasis in coaching. So it wasn't like we were sitting around doing nothing as, you know, just playing kickball with kids. Yeah. She went and got a master's. Yeah. So as you evaluate, you know, what it is that's critical for identity for girls in that
preteen and teen. One of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that I did that then was that I wanted to show them that in the midst of this vulnerable time that I could still find a way to focus on what I needed to do and wanted to do, and that my life was multifaceted and that I could be a student, I could try, you know, work to be a professional, support my husband, love my husband, give them the time and energy that they were really needing. And then, you know, I think we're not good at all things all the time, but at that moment it wasn't. Now I look back, I'm like, I can't believe I did it. It seemed hard at the time, but it was not that difficult. And it made me realize, you know, it's endless what you're capable of doing. And I hope it showed that to the girls as well, that there's so much more you can always.
That there's a pathway to improvement, yeah, even in the midst of a storm. That's right. Yeah. Self-improvement. And I think that's one of those critical aspects of identity for both young boys and young girls, for adults and, you know, and older people as well too. You know, who are you and why are you here? And I think those questions are, obviously we put those forward to our children because I want them to feel the burden of that journey that's inside of them. But I think in those moments in the car rides home and the descriptions of the challenges of those age groups and the social hierarchies that are involved, you know, that presence that you give, that opening, right, to absorb the, what is it? It's the ideas that lay in between the words and in between the sentences of things that seem trivial, but really mean everything to the child.
Yeah, it's just listening. They want you to listen. And I think it also gives, as a collective, the dynamic is crazy. We have from age 16 down to 11, but those times where it's like pinging things off each other and telling the story and, you know, one's taping the other one while she's telling some funny story about something that happened. And then one's like, oh, you'll never believe this. And it goes back to the other one. And, oh, you just cut me off. What's wrong? Yeah. You know, you're such a jerk. And, you know, and it's this banter that is like, I've complained plenty about their banter that annoys me, but it's a time like it just, there's nothing.
But you also repeatedly say, hey, let them work it out.
Yeah. It always, for me, it ends up being this like very positive experience for myself. I, you know, selfishly, but I think that it gives them a chance to kind of bond, and they learn about each other's little idiosyncratic episodes at school. And, you know, and the spectrum is like I said, from 16 down to 11. So, but it's neat because they can kind of bond and like just learn about each other's friends and teachers and
the
whatever.
Dynamics, yeah. Right? The dynamics of all of those exchanges, mm-hmm, and the growth that they have. That's the one thing that's shocking to me, is just the physical growth, the mental growth, the emotional growth, and hopefully the spiritual growth. I mean, obviously, I think in this, you know, profound space of emergent identity, spirituality becomes much more complicated, I think. But obviously we've seen, you know, substantial. It's like our oldest walks out of the house, goes to a concert, and I'm like, oh my God, she looks like she's 22 years old, right? Down to our youngest and, you know, her face products and her, you know, all the things that she loves and to spray on herself.
Her room is like as bright and
colorful
and just, you know, it looks like an elementary school art room, like times 10.
But with her unique personality, yeah, that's propped it up, and all her artwork in there too. And, you know, and as I look at all of that and I see these changes taking place, the thing that really gives me the most confidence is the consistency that you approach all of this, because these changes are dramatic. They're significant.
Yeah.
How do you not want to try something radically different or to press them on something or to protect them from something else? Or like, how do you restrain yourself to exist? Restrain is not the right word. How do you manage the impulse? How do you manage the impulse not to step in too much with their, you know, this growth period?
I think you've at times had to say, hey, this like you've like put your hand on my shoulder when I do get to a level where it's like my emotion is overtaking what they need in that moment. Instead of it being about them, it's kind of more about me. So I've learned a lot from you in that way, where it's where I've been able to pull back a bit on my pressure that is induced by my fear of what maybe they might fail from doing something, to by taking a risk or a behavior that I don't maybe agree with or want because I just want to protect them. You've kind of said like, hey, this is the time, and I've kind of taken on the mantra, I want them to make little mistakes versus big life altering mistakes. And so little mistakes are healthy.
They're fantastic. And,
but like I say that with my children have been through
huge things.
Some huge things.
Huge things.
Your children have been through
huge
some
things.
Huge things. Yeah. And so I know they're already,
and they bear the burden of our huge things.
Yeah.
Too.
That's and just life. Like it's just, you know, we don't have like a typical, you're traveling a lot. My family's away. Your parents are here, but they still have a life and, you know, but they're getting older and it just, there's a lot of dynamics that they don't have control over that we've kind of, you know, presented to them without them having any kind of say in it. And so I think, you know, it's trying to figure out how to let them be, but also knowing, I think that they've been hardened a bit too and jaded or so.
Do you think being hardened at their age is good?
I think for myself, I wouldn't be who I am without having the harder things happen. I learned more from that than the positives, or the less painful, I guess you could say. For the kids, in the sense of wanting to protect them, it pains me to see them in pain, but I also know that they're learning and figuring things out, and they have more resilience than a lot of their peers. And so I believe that as they become adults and they grow and they try to figure this out on their own at some point, that they're going to have a better framework of how to handle a lot of these hard things, I hope.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think hope is an interesting idea, but, you know, obviously hope is reinforced by the consistency and the input and the patience and the listening.
And knowing that we're all, you and I are always there to support them.
Yes.
And help them through the pain. And
that's right.
And having that sense of security, like you and I both had from our families, from our parents, of like, when push comes to shove, we know where to go to. We know who's going to help us and who's going to, you know, dig in with us.
All right. So as we move into, you know, the summer and they finish their perspectives, we've got, you know, junior next year and then three middle schoolers.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, this summer will play a major role in all of their maturity. They're all going to go experience unique camps and challenges and we're going to, you know, pull out the best of them as much as we can, all while letting them enjoy the summer. But I mean, I think we have a pretty packed schedule, which mm-hmm. is good. So as you think about the kids in this next phase of their lives, do you, you know, what will you be looking for in their growth this summer? And then what will be some of the ideas that you believe will better prepare them for this, you know, next stage of this very important period?
I think I look at it in two different ways, sort of individually and collectively. Collectively, I always want the summer to be a time for our family to kind of slow down a bit, come back around together. We always take a trip, usually to Maine. But whether it be, because we're kind of in and out of all these different places this summer, it's just finding time as a family for to kind of strip away all the normal stuff that we deal with, the same car ride,
the regiment,
the same route to back in school every day.
Yeah, I mean,
same taco night, spaghetti night. Like, I'm good. So I think you know, maybe
everybody
throwing, like,
listening knows you have all of those nights too, right?
Yeah. I think it's like the growth that I hope to see as a collective is sort of when the girls can all pack into a hotel room together, and, you know, or a condo or a house that we stay in, and they're talking to each other at night, and we still have that that opportunity, and
it's the innocence.
And it's really beautiful. I don't take that lightly, and I didn't have sisters, so I tell them all the time, you guys are so fortunate, because girl bonding is a true special thing. That's what I see in the summer for them is that kind of maybe finding a new thing that we like, or, you know, just looking back on the pictures from that time. But as individuals, if I were to kind of look at each of them, the oldest going into her junior year, we are beginning the process of not just, you know, like getting her prepared to leave the nest. And I know that it sounds crazy, and I hate that we have to begin that process, but I think in some ways she's ready to begin that.
Absolutely.
And
needs to.
Yeah. And seeing her kind of just, she does, her growth is like leaps and bounds. And wanting her to know that she can do anything, and but she's in control of that. She's in control of her own destiny.
Making good choices.
Yeah.
Choices that will maybe be difficult up front, but in the long term, she'll evolve into the woman she wants to be.
Yeah. Like last year, she began kind of working in the summer for the first time. And I think all those little changes have matured her to, you know, to get to where she is right now. But I see, I can envision some intense growth from her this summer.
Me too.
Second, she's going to a theater sort of music camp, and this year has probably been the most intense growth that she's experienced at 13 years old. And I cannot be more impressed with how well she's handled herself in all different ways, socially, academically, at a new school. And just, she was the lead in her school musical and just killed it. She surprised everybody. She was kind of the unknown champion of theater. And last summer I couldn't get her to leave the house to do a camp. So knowing that she's asked to do a sleepaway camp for theater and music, and she basically said, I'll go anywhere. And when I told her it was Maine and it was where we go every summer with our family, she was like, sign me up. And so, I mean,
it's really amazing.
I'm excited to see like how many new songs she writes, how many friends she meets, and just, she's going into her eighth grade year, which is really a big deal.
Pivotal year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Third, is it okay that I'm going like one by one? Like,
yeah,
this?
Yes, absolutely. It's okay.
She's
I think everybody looks at, I mean, any, you know, as I, it's crazy that I gotta quantify it as, but as parents, if you're doing well and you're doing it right, you individualize your kids as much as possible.
Yeah, our kids are, I mean, granted, we have two kids with different parents than the other two, but they're very, even within that, they're very uniquely different, like extremely absolutely different. The only thing that's similar right now is like I can't tell the difference on the phone, the sound of their voices. But
and they all have the same shoe almost.
Oh yeah, which is awesome. I like four of us wear the same size shoe right now.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
Third. Just seeing her potential continue to, she kind of shows up in life with a lot of self-confidence that I think she was born with or something.
Nah, it's innate in her.
Yeah. And just the ease with which she does do things. And that is how she can engage with people. How she can take on a challenge and just figure it out. She's getting a little bit of an attitude, but she is 12. So, yeah, but she makes some really, her sarcasm and her jokes are like getting really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Really good.
It's not team guy level good yet, but it's rapidly, rapidly improving.
Yeah. She's kind of like a, I would say like a quiet assassin, but she's not like a
silent. She doesn't want to assassinate anybody. She just wants to play. She's playful.
Yeah. So. And last but not least, the youngest, like her maturity this year has tripled.
Yeah.
And just wanting to identify herself as not just the youngest in the family, but her own friend groups and how she wants to be a multi-sport athlete, and she's an artist, and she's an academic, and she's a nice person. And I don't know, I feel like I'm bragging, but our kids are pretty friggin' awesome.
Well, I think it's primarily a result of the structure that we spend countless hours. It was funny, you know, Dr. Peterson was on Sean's show the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he made a comment about was, you know, that couples will have a dramatic improvement in their relationship if they engage in meaningful, direct, truthful conversation for at least 90 minutes a week. And it was so funny. Sean was like, that doesn't seem like a lot.
Yeah.
And as you and I know, that's not even remotely,
it's kind of our love language. Like we basically talk about this.
That's right.
Every day, whether we go for a walk together for 45 minutes or an hour or so, or like we get on the phone cause you're traveling. It's what we want to talk about.
And I think that's critical for people to recognize, you know, that in the midst of all these, the outside challenges, the internal challenges, that as long as I think parents or whoever the caretaker is able to really spend a significant amount of time deconstructing the challenges, deconstructing the individual, and then figuring out what are the motivational triggers or the pressure points that we need to apply collectively for the girls to move into or through the necessity of resilience to mature the next level, the next level.
Yeah. Cause this week is an example. We could actually pull apart 5 or 6 significant issues that we dealt with this week, including today. Today we spent 3 hours of our day over something that affected our oldest child, that is essentially it's a part of her identity, mm-hmm. part of her future.
That's right.
And we don't take it lightly, I think is a good way to put it.
No, and I think the what I want to know and what I'd like you to offer is why is it critical to spend so much time with me discussing the kids?
Well, first of all, I mean, you're the first person that I can express myself freely who also has the same intentions. There's a level between the two of us, I think, from an immediate, I would say.
And this is not something that I used to possess, but it's something I had to learn. And I think that's what COVID was so awesome for me, because I realized through our exchanges, through this type of back and forth, this type of evaluation, that there's a lot more that it requires, you know. And I think about, you know, I think I sometimes get lost in the rigor of the travel and, you know, all of that that's required with it and the intensity of it, and you can get immersed in your own necessity of satisfaction. Whereas when I come home, like, the first thing I want to do is I want to make sure, all right, what do you need help with? What do we need to do? And who do we need to discuss right now?
Yeah. And that always changes too. I think we've found a way that we're trying to help everybody, but when the one child is really struggling or really needs the focus.
That's the hard part, right? Yeah. It requires... And I think any parent out there that has gone through all of this, they realize that when that moment hits your child and you see the intensity, the spectrum, right? It's the spectrum of intensity that weighs on your child, that challenges your child, that shocks your child. Yeah. You know, it's like,
and we're talking about heavy stuff. We're not talking about, like, you know, a breakup or
whatever. Although breakups are important.
Yeah, they sure are. We're talking about some heavy stuff that actually neither you or I had to experience as a child. So we're coming into that kind of new as well. And so we really have to think and work through it. And that's it. I think we created a mutual respect for what we believe is the priority, and how we hear each other and how we both listen to each other. And then I think it's been, for me, I don't find satisfaction, joy, accomplishment, and really anything else at this point. And that's again, like, I got a master's degree and it was kind of like, okay, like, what's next? I can do that. That's a separate thing. But when it comes to our family and our children, I know that I've been gifted with the job of being a mother to four beautiful girls who are each uniquely different, coming from uniquely different tragic backgrounds, but also have completely different qualities and things they bring to the table. And I get to do that. I get to be the one who helps them through it. And then I get to be the one that feels just complete and utter joy when I see them succeed and when they feel fulfillment from something. So that, I don't know what else gives you purpose, but for me, that's the number one.
Well, I've got a question then for you.
Okay. I love David's questions. Well, these happen.
Oh, you have no idea.
All the time.
Like, everybody, you have to understand that every day, all day, I just keep asking myself questions. But with Jonna, because of she is the most amazing human being on the planet, at night after I take shower and I ask her the questions, and these are not your typical questions.
And it's always, I have a question for you. And I'm like, oh shit, what do I do right now? Do I like pretend that I'm really tired, or do I just like give over to it? And I think I give over to it.
I would say typically there's a 90% opportunity that you're going to answer my question. Yeah.
So what's the question?
All right. The question is, in the midst of this profound dedication, evaluation, observation,
responsibility,
the logistics, the driving, the making sure they're signed up for this and to that, and to manage the emotional aspects of the constantly and perpetually shifting power hierarchies of middle school. In the midst of all this and all this dedication that you put externally, what is it about you as a mother that you struggle with the most? As a person, your individual self.
As a mother?
Well, the term mother, there's this immediate external component, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a mom. That means there's a body in this world. There's a child. There's a human being. There's a soul in this world that you are responsible for.
Mm-hmm. What is the
biggest
struggle?
But as a mother,
okay,
making sure you're good, making sure you as an individual, as Jonna, the mother, Jonna, the human being, Jonna, the wife, Jonna, you know, the...
I'm the personal assistant to five people, PA times five.
What is it?
What is the hardest part?
Yeah.
I think that trying to figure out how to find time that is solely my own, that is to take care of myself, because it can be all consuming. It's not just the physical showing up and being and doing, but it's the emotional. And so what I've really struggled with the last couple of years is trying to know how to separate just a little bit so that I have the energy to get out of it what they need and what I need. Like I was explaining before, I don't feel the same level of pride if I'm just completely demolished. So I think,
what are those things? What are the specific things, those moments where you're able to, it's not be at peace, right? There is no such thing in terms of the commitment that you make with the development of another person, but it's more so like, what are the moments that, you know, check, I'm good.
Because of as a reflection of what's happened.
Yeah. Or what is happening, or what potentially will happen.
It's just kind of stripping it away from all of the chaos, and just getting on the phone with you when you're traveling, talking about something that's really good that happened in the day that was really positive. It's going through my phone and watching a video of our oldest doing a left-footed corner that curls in and goes in the goal. It's like getting a hug from the one that's gives the hugs. It's having the connection with your girls, knowing that they need that mothering from me. It's like it's the little moments that kind of fill that bucket, that give that kind of reprieve. And okay, I have nothing left to give. Separate from just taking care of myself, but those little things mean they're the biggest part. I'm probably not explaining myself that well.
It's a very complicated thing to assess.
It's a feeling.
It's a feeling.
It's not as
the way I, the reason why I want, it's because there's women out there right now that are mothers that are trying to figure out, how do I replenish myself? How do I get to that space where all I'm doing is I'm giving to this kid and this kid and this kid, I'm giving to him, I'm giving to my parents. How do I replenish myself? How do I evaluate it?
Well, go work out first and foremost. Get up in the morning, drop the kids off, go work out. If you're working, do it first. I think working out first thing is key. And doing something that's just yours. Like David and I love going to the beach and doing a beach walk or doing a workout in the gym. But I also love to go to hot yoga by myself. I don't really love when David comes.
I'm so good though.
Yeah. He's like, the whole time. And it just so annoying. So I think it's like, it's actually, and he loves going to jujitsu and that's his thing. And I don't really want to do that. So it's okay to,
although you did great with Renato the other day. Yeah. You did.
We play tennis together, which is amazing. That's my favorite thing physically to do with you. But besides that, getting up, working out, finding, for me, I love reading. I love a book. I can kind of step back and check away if I need moments in the day alone. That's the perfect excuse. I just go sit by myself for a little bit. I think ultimately knowing that this time is fleeting and being able to embrace that, and I've felt like the visceral feeling of them growing up and changing so rapidly has the last few years has, it's just been insane. And so there will be a time when I'm not driving them three times to school or going to 200 soccer games, and I will not know what to do with myself. So I want this to feel like it's not a job, but there's a purpose to it, and just really kind of embracing that.
Well, that's pretty awesome. I just want to thank you for being the mother that you are, and for being the incredible wife you are, and for willing to get on here and share your thoughts.
We had to do this after all this time. So
yeah, you were the perfect first guest for me to interview.
And we've evolved a lot since the last interview.
And that's the beauty of this whole thing. So happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you.